is the weekend, and that means new movies are out, which means only one thing. Welcome to John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
I'm very excited about this. This will be fun. Or should I not be excited about it?
I would love it if you would be excited about it. At least you'd be excited about something. So. And now, John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
Hello, I am John Serba, and you are listening to the I Hate Your Favorite Movie podcast. I'm here, as always, with Eric Holtgren. We're going to look at some of the new releases this week, including Independence Day,
Resurrection, right?
Redemption? Resurgence. Independence Day, Resurgence.
Are you sure that's not what the European Union is doing right now? Hang on a second. Let me look this up.
Independence Day, Brexit.
Independence Day. Let's get out of the union, then Google what the union actually was, figure out what we left. That's a real thing, kids, if you're not paying attention.
That's a good joke, Eric.
It
Thanks.
Is. Thank you.
It's resurgence.
Okay.
I know it was resurgence.
As the fact checker of the show, I wanted to make sure we were at least talking about the proper movie before you tear it to
unlike most every other week on this podcast, I actually knew it before I said it.
Awesome.
You know, I had written that joke last night.
You almost delivered it with a straight face.
Look at my Twitter account. You'll see from last night.
Okay.
We'll talk about Independence Day Resurgence here in a minute. And I actually did like I took the youth angle this week. Because I know in the last episode I said, hey, maybe I'll get around to seeing Free State of Jones starring Matthew McConaughey.
You did, and you totally threw me off last night because I was at home and I was doing some work and my Twitter went off and mm-hmm. It was you going, getting ready for Shark Week by seeing The Shallows. I'm like, I was totally going to see that, but he said he wasn't going to watch it, so I didn't go. What in the...
I decided that Free State of Jones at 2 hours and 20 minutes was going to be a big, long, dry thing I didn't want to sit through. Instead, I went to The Shallows, which was a shorter, conceptually simpler, and not nearly as dry. I mean, like, literally, you know? I mean,
right, it's all
ocean,
wet. Yeah, for sure. And then you doubled up last night, as I'm looking at
your Twitter. Yeah, I did a double feature of The Shallows and Independence Day,
We're going to do a whole podcast with 16-year-old John Serba, who did a double feature at the cinema last night.
Hey, double features are part of my job.
I'm aware. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But that just feels like, did you get Twizzlers? Just sit there and, like, feels like an episode of that 70s show. Like, I'm going to go see the double feature tonight, guys.
So, but you know, there's that thing where I actually have the freedom to shift gears. Like Thursday morning, I'm laying there in bed thinking, I don't want to sit through Free State of Jones. My week has been long enough. I'm going to watch The Shallows. I am going to watch Blake Lively in a bikini get bit by a shark. Instead of Matthew McConaughey running around with scraggly facial hair,
when, you know,
playing
what?
A farmer.
When you preface them like that, there's really no choice, actually, right? Like, that's not even a decision.
No, I know. But, like, McConaughey, I mean, let's face it. The guy has done a complete 180 on his career, and everything he does has been, you know, I feel the need to see it. So I'll, you know, eventually I'll see Free State of Jones. Maybe once it, you know, once it hits pay-per-view or something. And that's horrible of me to say because I'm a big screen guy, but I don't know. The buzz is not there for Free State of Jones.
No.
It's there for The Shallows. Yeah. Like, all of a sudden, a few people had seen this movie earlier this week, and we're talking about it, and, like, it's good, and it's on social media. And I don't know, maybe I'm letting myself be marketed to for a change.
Well, we as marketers appreciate that.
Sure.
We love that it works.
Manipulators.
So was it the marketing? Was it the marketing about the movie or the overall vibe of Shark Week that pulled you into it?
Well, you know, it was. It's a number of things. One being, trying to, instead of, you know, being what I say goes, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to be the trendsetter. Well, I do try to listen to what other people are talking about, and therefore join that conversation.
Sure.
Instead of being the conversation starter. So I wanted to be part of the conversation about The Shallows, so I decided to see that instead. And secondly, Did you see Open Water, that movie from 10 years ago?
I saw it in Saugatuck when they did the film
festival. I did too. And it, you know, that was one of the premieres. We saw it before the rest of the country did. Or at least before it got a wide release. And that movie scared the pants off me. Mm-hmm. I am someone who's got that like primal fear of large bodies of water. Looking around in every direction, all you see is water. No thanks. I will just take a big gulp of water, go down. See you later. Good night. I don't want anything swimming by and brushing against my feet.
You have thought a lot about this.
So that is a very scary movie. And I thought, well, I've seen Jaws. I've seen Jaws 2. I've seen Jaws 3. I've seen Jaws 4. I've seen Open Water. I've seen Sharknado.
Deep Blue?
I haven't seen Deep Blue.
Good. Keep it off the list.
But you know, all that, just like, I guess maybe I'm sort of a shark movie expert, so I wanted to go see The Shallows.
All right.
And we're already talking about it. We'll get to another movie here in a second. But The Shallows is actually, it's one of those movies where you're like, sharks don't act like that. Let's face it. Sharks do not act like this. I've seen enough shark documentaries that they don't stalk people. They don't act outside of their own instinctual core small brain. Let's face it. But this is a very suspenseful movie. It's very scary. And you know, I think one of the reasons why all of a sudden it's getting a good buzz from people who have seen it is because what are we battered with at the movies? I mean, and we tend to go back to this every week because it's such a big deal.
Well, that's because they do that.
Well, the cinema right now is just tons and tons of complicated high concept stuff. Really high concept stuff. I haven't seen The Conjuring 2, which did reasonably well.
Sure.
It opened. But I looked at it and I'm like, that's a 2-hour and 15-minute long movie? A cheapo horror film? 2 hours and 15 minutes long? Do we need that? I don't know. I saw that The Shallows is 90 minutes, and it's got like 5 or 6 people in the cast, and it probably, I assume it was shot on a nice low budget, and I'm like, you know what? This is something I actually want to see. And it was quite refreshing. It was as refreshing as a dip in the ocean.
The jokes write themselves on this
they
podcast.
They do. And it's not going to win Oscars. It's not going to make $400 million. It better not spawn a sequel. That would be lame. Blake Lively gets bit by a shark again. The Shallows 2,
Didn't learn her lesson.
But, you know, you look at it, and I also like that kind of basic survival story type stuff, too, where, you know, you've got 4 options instead of 400. You know, how are they going to solve the problem of the alien invasion in Independence Day? I don't know. Who cares? When you're on a rock in the tide, in high tide is coming, what are you going to do, you know? And I like, you know, that was a pretty suspenseful, you know, piece of drama in itself. One problem presents itself after another. It's not the president and the aliens and the Brent Spiner. He just woke up from a coma. You know, it's a girl and a shark. And you have in fact, there's. They, of course, set up her character, you know, so she's going to the same beach that her mom went to, and she has pictures of her mom, and this is like, going to this beach is part of the mourning process because her mom has died of cancer. We actually don't need any of that. We are going to sympathize with someone who...
was trapped on a rock.
Trapped on a rock.
3,000-pound fish around.
Yeah, with a great white circling her, you know? I mean, you don't need, I mean, it's like, it's too complicated. They made it more complicated than it needed to be. You know, open water, that was like two scuba divers. They come up and realize their tour has left them behind. You know, the chaperone didn't count the heads of the preschoolers before they drove off on the school bus.
Yep.
Primal fear. Four-year-old being left behind at the box factory on a field trip. I'm making a Simpsons reference.
I know what you're doing.
All right. For anybody out there who hasn't seen every episode of The Simpsons 43 times, that's a Simpsons reference. So I thought The Shallows was really refreshing. It doesn't demand Blake Lively to, like, you know, have this great soul-searching performance. I'm not sure if she's capable of it. She's actually a pretty talented actress. You know, it's a physical performance that those kinds of performances always tend to be overlooked, you know, for, you know, the higher minded characterizations and historical figures and all that kind of stuff that you see turning up in the
award season
in award season and all that. You know, I actually liked her movie from last year called The Age of Adeline.
I did too. I really liked it. I think if I had one complaint that will sound very much like I wish I did your job for a living, but like I thought it was awesome. I just didn't think, the only complaint I had is I didn't need the narration at the end. Like, I put all that together. I don't need you to tell me what's...
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You know, I mean, the movie kind of talked down to you in that sense. And it was corny. It was very corny, but...
I didn't mind that because it felt refreshing enough in a love story sort of sense that I was like, this is pretty cool.
It was kind of old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And she has some screen presence, you know? She has...
Certainly in that movie, right? Like,
yeah, you know, she has some charisma. And she brings some of that charisma to this movie. I mean...
I'm only saying because I haven't seen this one, so I can't agree with you.
Sure. She brings some of that kind of light substance, you know, to this movie. And I do, you know, for being as simple as it is, I can't say anything more about it other than it kept me in the moment. And that's all movies really ask you to do sometimes, is to let them command your attention, and this does it pretty well.
So I had a question that I wanted to ask you since last night, and I saw you put this on your Twitter account. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, well, number one, I'm bummed because I really wanted to see this movie. Number two, I immediately thought about Open Water for sure, but then I immediately went back and thought about Locke and like why I seem to like these movies where it's just one human being doing one thing for 90 minutes and trying to build a story around this. You know, if you haven't seen Locke, it's a guy in a car for 89 minutes as a story unfolds around him.
Yeah.
And
Tom
Hardy is in the movie and he's Locke driving around this car. Right. And I still talk about this movie because I just thought it was such and I don't know what you thought about it, and we'll get that obviously in a second, but like, I thought it was such a cool way to tell a story and how complex to tell the story when all you have is maybe there's two or three shots, but essentially a shot in a car for 89 minutes as you tell this very, very complex story that unfolds around him. And so I know this probably isn't similar, but I was thinking to myself, like, maybe every once in a while we need these movies where it's just, like you said, one person doing one thing for one set of time without the Tesseract cube, you know, or Slimer, or, you know, the president waking up from a coma and aliens coming back 20 years later, like a family reunion, like none of that stuff. You walk in and you know already what you're getting.
Yeah.
A girl, a rock, a shark, go.
Yeah.
A guy, a car, 89 minutes, go.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Locke was really remarkable. It's similar in that sense. Locke is a performance and dialogue driven film, you know. And in fact, it's a lot of one sided dialogue.
Yes,
you know,
which I thought was profound. And I know these aren't the same movie, but the singularity is kind of what I was.
Yeah, exactly. The Shallows is if you don't know what you're doing behind a camera, this story doesn't work. You've got to know how to generate suspense with an angle, you know, a low angle, something as basic as camera moving up towards the surface of the water. You know?
Right.
Shark POV shot.
Yes.
Or whatever, you know, whatever they're going to fake you out with. Tuna. POV shot. So it kept me in the moment. It kept me tense in my seat. It kept me scared a little bit because it taps into that fear.
Was it busy?
The theater? Where yeah, there were quite a few people there to see it, actually. Not surprising because it does have that good buzz around it right now. So I recommend it. I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not going to win a bunch of awards, but for, you know, sometimes you get these high concept things and you feel like it's got a bunch of half-developed ideas in it. This is one idea stretched as far as it can go, you know. And she befriends a seagull named Steve, who has an injured wing, so he's stuck on that rock too. So she's not all alone. One thing that always bugs me about these films, you know, the Tom Hanks stranded movie, Castaway.
Castaway, yes.
It drives me nuts when people talk to themselves. I never talk to myself. Do you talk to yourself?
You're going to hate this answer. Yes, all the time,
oh,
actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
You don't talk to yourself at all?
No, not really.
No self-talk.
Not really. Not at all. I occasionally mutter under my breath when I'm like under a table with a screwdriver. You know, but that's it. That's it.
No, I don't talk to a volleyball or anything like
that. But you don't speak in exposition. You don't speak your thoughts out loud.
No.
Tell whoever might be listening.
No, not in the like
what you're thinking.
What you're, you know, this movie.
You already know what you're
this
thinking.
Movie thing that you're referring to. I do not do, like, where I'm talking to a mirror and like, no, that's not what happens. That's not what I mean at all.
It's not like, you don't sit there on a rock by yourself as a shark goes by and you go, oh, 32 seconds. So that gives me this much time to swim to the buoy.
No,
you don't speak exposition out loud.
Nor do I do mathematical equations out loud. I don't. That doesn't happen.
Okay. I don't do mathematical equations ever at all. I'm going to move on to a movie I liked even more that I think is one of the best movies I've seen all year, actually. Do you know what The Neon Demon is?
No, but I'm excited to hear about it. Oh, wait, this is the Drive, right?
Yes, Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed Drive, followed that up a few years ago with Only God Forgives, which was kind of an ambitious failure, and now is back with The Neon Demon, which is, this is an amazing film. It is an amazing, amazing film. Refn has referred to himself as a fetish director, which I think we mentioned that a little bit in the last podcast, where, you know, he takes it a step beyond, you know, Quentin Tarantino shooting Uma Thurman's feet for longer than is comfortable for the rest
of
us.
Yes, right.
And this is it's set in Los Angeles. Like Drive, set in Los Angeles, in the fashion industry, but it's not this. It's not satire. It's not worship. It's fascination. That's how I see it. It's like I've read interviews with him where he's like, you know, I don't love and I don't hate the fashion industry. You know, there's an interest there. You know, there's an aesthetic to it, Elle Fanning plays a 16-year-old girl. She's an orphan. She's living in a scuzzy motel. She moved from Georgia to L.A. to pursue her dream of being a model. She lives in a scuzzy motel that's run by Keanu Reeves, who is great in this. He is great with the, like, one dimension he has to play here. Really remarkable. And she's trying to break into the industry, and you know, the opening shots of the movie are of Elle Fanning in this photo shoot where she's laying there, like a porcelain doll with her neck slashed and there's blood all over. and the camera just feels like it's kind of crawling on her, you know? It's that, like, you get that oogie vibe at times, you know? And this is, I was just hypnotized by this movie and the imagery that he uses. So after this photo shoot, Elle Fanning meets Jenna Malone, who's a makeup designer, and she kind of befriends her and falls into this circle of friends that features Bella Heathcote and Abby Lee, who play, you know, more traditional, like, blonde peroxide, have had work done type models. And Elle Fanning is the natural beauty who's coming in and stealing jobs from them. You know, they're like 22 and they're being aged out of this business. and she steps in. And there really isn't a whole lot of story here, but there's just this, like, lurking dread in this. And one of the really prime components of Drive was music.
Yep.
You know, and this is that same kind of vibe. It's got that, like, Eurotrash techno thing that's, like, twisted to make it eerie, you know? You have these great, like, left field sequences where they feel like dreams, you know. They're a little hallucinogenic and bizarre. There's a scene where they go to this, like, show in like some kind of dance club or something, you know. It's even hard to get a grip on what kind of setting these set pieces are, and it's like this weird strobing S&M thing going on. You're like, what did I just see? What am I looking at? I can't peel my eyes off this. And there's another one where she, I don't know. It's like an out of body experience she has when she's on the fashion runway, and she's the last model to walk out. She's like the anchor, the star of this show, you know. I was utterly hypnotized by this movie. It is every frame, every shot of this movie is suggestive for a while, and then all of a sudden it just hits you like a right cross. And I'm going to stop right there and speak in way more general terms, because, you know, you'll want this movie to surprise you, but I also want to warn people, like, this movie kind of falls somewhere between Dario Argento's Suspiria, which is like that classic atmospheric horror movie, slow moving, slow building, real tense, and like the kind of crass, like, taboo busting exploitation of Spring Breakers. Did you see Spring Breakers?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it made me think about that too. But it's absolutely its own beast. And Elle Fanning is really good at anchoring this, where, you know, she looks like she's just this innocent doll, and she might not be. Who is the neon demon? Is the question you're going to be asking yourself. If anybody knows anything, I'm going to throw one reference out there. And if anybody knows anything about The Legend of Countess Bathory, I'm leaving it right there. Because that was just like, bam, that's part of that. That was like the right cross and then the follow-up, the left. I love this movie. It's one of the best things I've seen all year. I recommend it with so many reservations, though, because I know some people, I would never tell my mom to see this movie. Never, ever. I wouldn't tell my mom to see Drive either. And this, because Drive, one of Refn's, you know, signatures is like extreme bursts of violence. So, you know, something to that effect is going to happen. There's no way it can't. Otherwise, there's no release to all this tension that he builds. A movie unlike any other, a visual feast, to use a cliche. I love this movie. I can't wait to see it again. I want to, like, drop the mic right now. Go out, watch it again, right now.
You have one more thing to do, though, before you
I know. Well, are we ready to do this?
I don't know. Are you ready to do
I am ready.
All right. And now, John Serba hates your favorite movie that may or may not be a high school reunion of aliens.
If Independence Day, Resurgence is your favorite movie, I hate your favorite movie. And you know, I really don't...
John, we will not go quietly into the dark night. I'm sure, is that the line from the... I don't know.
I, you know, I bring some baggage. Some people loved Independence Day. It's empty entertainment.
I was thinking about this because you said this to me after the last podcast, and I think revisionist history, right? I mm-hmm. remember liking it at the time, although right now I don't think it holds up at all. And I might hold some of the same baggage you do. I've never been a huge Will Smith fan, so it's not mm-hmm. like Will Smith punches the alien and smokes a cigar. It's the greatest scene in American filmmaking. Next to I'll Be Your Wingman Anytime. Like, those are it's the top two, right? Like, I'm not that guy. So,
you know, I remember sitting down. There are three movies in the 90s that were just mega hyped event films.
Okay.
That really stick out in my mind. One, Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Classic.
Yes.
Two, Independence Day.
Yep.
Where I remember standing in line to get into the theater to see this movie and braving crowds and all that stuff. And sitting down, and I joke not one bit, I sat there, crossed my arms, and said, impress me. Because I went through a mess to see a stupid movie. This is the beginning of my cynicism, mind
this
you.
This movie is the catalyst?
One of them. Okay. And then after that, another Roland Emmerich-directed film was Godzilla.
Oh.
The Matthew Broderick Godzilla, which was the same thing. Oh. It had that big,
so bad,
mega-hyped, gotta-see-it event movie sales pitch. Hard sales pitch going for it. If you don't see it, you are a loser. You don't know what's going on in pop culture. You don't know what's going on in film. You don't know what's going on anywhere. And you go see it, and it is just this disappointing mess. And so Independence Day and Godzilla, I blame for that, like, chip on my shoulder. In fact, I think they kind of made me who I am today. To a degree.
And knowing who you are today, I would actually say that probably Godzilla and its marketing probably did it more than Independence Day, just because, like, Godzilla seemed like they didn't get Godzilla at all. They just thought, giant lizard in the city? This is easy. Why wouldn't we do this?
I mean,
we're not here to talk about that, but...
It's a slightly different story because I loved Godzilla as a kid.
This is what I'm saying. I feel like ruining Godzilla is more the catalyst of why you want to punch some people in the face.
Yeah.
That two sequels you didn't want to see in the first place.
So Roland Emmerich is an unapologetic populist filmmaker, you know. I read an interview with him recently where he said, you know, in film school everybody laughed at him because he wanted to make commercial pictures, and they all wanted to make art. So I don't begrudge him trying to do this stuff, but every movie he's made is just this pandering mess of cliches. And even, like, I actually sort of liked White House Down.
It wasn't awesome, but it wasn't terrible.
It had its tongue in its cheek a little bit, you know? I mean, Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum turfing the White House lawn. Okay.
Right. Yep.
You can't do that with a straight face.
Nope.
You know? And I'm not saying the Independence Day sequel is straight faced by any means, but it just does nothing. There's nothing memorable about it, really. At least you can look back on Independence Day and go, well, you know, this is what hooked us? What made us want to see that? It was the trailer of the ship coming down and blasting the White House with a laser,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
destroying landmarks. And that became Roland Emmerich's, you know,
favorite
signature,
thing to do.
Which is just, you know, every movie he's made has been some, like, mass destruction. And in this, it's there's two like meta jokes in this movie. One is Jeff Goldblum going, "Oh, they always go after landmarks." The other meta joke is, you know, the ship blast just destroys London completely, like pretty much just London, it does not exist anymore. You know, the London Bridge falls down on the screen. It really falls down. And the ship just like, and it grinds to a halt right on the White House, and it doesn't knock it over, and just like a few rocks fall on the top of the house. What junk. This movie is such junk. Bill Pullman returns as the former president who, like, you know, there's some, like, vaguely, and maybe it was in the first movie, which I literally have not seen the first movie since it was in the theaters 20 years ago.
I've probably seen it more, obviously more recently than you, but not recently.
Was it established that some people who had some level of exposure to the aliens had like a psychic something happening?
So
like Bill Pullman, you know, he's this old guy now, and he's like crazy. He's a crazy old man. He's got a big beard, and he talks funny, and he bulges his eyes out all the time, you know. And he's being driven mad because he has these visions and dreams about what, and that's like him having some kind of supernatural insight into what the aliens are doing. And it makes no sense. And so the Brent Spiner character, he's been in a coma since the last movie. And of course he wakes up here and he can kind of do the same thing. The psychic reach. Jeff Goldblum returns. I don't even remember what his character is.
I think he was a scientist in the last one.
But. Yeah, he's a scientist in this. I mean, obviously he's a scientist, but what does he do?
Well, I mean, in this one, doesn't he like run like the moon base or something?
Yeah,
like
I guess so. Earth I guess well, you know, in the
the non-Avenger Avengers, I don't know.
The basic concept is, we on Earth have taken alien technology and we can use it now. So we're using it as defense. So we now have a base on the moon and we have ships, and like the opening like voiceover narration is the new president played by Stella Ward. who's she's practicing a speech, which just happens to be an exposition catching us up on everything that's happened the last 20 years. Every bit of dialogue in this movie is exposition telling us what's actually happening, because they can't show us what's happening with any kind of coherence. So they have to tell us too. It's like that scene in the last Transformers movie where, Mark Wahlberg yells, "It's a giant robot, and it's sucking things into space," or whatever, you know. And it's like as if we couldn't tell that it's a giant robot sucking things into space. Liam Hemsworth is new to the cast. He's sort of the Will Smith character. They've kind of cut the Will Smith character into two or three people. All like young pilots who obviously, you know, they're sending their ship to the dangerous suicidal mission, and everybody thinks they're dead and they're not. So that Will Smith character, Liam Hemsworth is a pilot. Jesse T. Usher is a pilot. Micah Monroe is the daughter of the Bill Pullman president, and she's also a pilot. And Angela Baby, is that's her screen name apparently. The Chinese actress plays a pilot as well, because this movie has to sell tickets in China, so they add Chinese characters to the film, in that kind of, you know, pandering for that audience, because the movie costs a whole lot of money to make, and they need to make a lot of money to recoup that. So a lot of these films pander to Chinese audiences because this is a huge market now.
Well, and I don't know if we talked about it. I think we might have, but like this has been the worst year for film since like the 40s. So they've got to do this because that's the only way they're making their money. They're not making it here because it's, despite these giant films that we talk about ad nauseum on this podcast, it's still not enough to raise all ships. And most of that stuff happens overseas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what solves that problem a little bit?
I do actually.
Making movies like The Shallows.
Yes.
Which probably cost $10 million and will make 100.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? To some extent, you scratch your head at the lack of arithmetic for some of these things when you're like, we made this movie for $240 million and it made $1 million in the box office, right? Yeah. Like, you and I both know that we've gone to enough of these screenings that you see that stuff coming a mile away, and you mm-hmm. likely saw it before we went to said screening that you were going to guess what your weekend pull was. You knew that before you even showed up. So, mm-hmm. I know you're being tongue-in-cheek about a woman, a rock, and a shark, but, like, to some degree, like, if you have to make it, and you have to make it in a very specific way so it succeeds overseas because you know it's going to fail here, maybe don't make it.
Well, maybe there's something wrong with it conceptually other than we don't have a decent original idea, so let's just regurgitate an old one, which is the story of this summer, you know, in spades. Every summer is like that to a degree where it's, you know, sequel, prequel, franchise season.
But it's not, I don't feel that it's been like this where you're just like, because I feel like I was thinking about this on the way in to do the podcast, that any other year, like, this is my, without a doubt, my favorite medium. I mm-hmm. love seeing movies. It's my favorite thing on earth to go do is I'm going to go tonight to see The Shallows because, you know, they only had mm-hmm. one screening last night at 7:30. I couldn't make it. So I'm going tonight for sure. It's my favorite thing to do. But as I was driving in, I was thinking to myself, like, if this was last year, every one of these podcasts I did with you, I would have seen one, if not two, of the things you're talking about. And we're on episode 10, and I've seen probably five of the whatever.
You didn't rush out and see Warcraft after I told you about it?
Despite your glowing endorsement, I did not. But that's what I'm saying. Is like, I can skip it. I can skip it. Yeah. I can skip it.
You going to rush out and see Tarzan next week?
No.
Who thinks, I want to know who thinks they can sell a Tarzan movie in 2016. We've had 4,912 Tarzan movies already.
Well, you get your 16th.
Are we going to notice that there's 4,913th Tarzan movie?
I know we've been making fun of it, but you're going to get your 16th Ben-Hur in August. 16 times they've made that. 16.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And you know what? Independence Day is...
As many candles as are in 16 candles, they have made Ben-Hur movies. Like, that's a thing.
That's some marvelous math.
See? That's why you have me on the show, to fact check what was happening.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sensing less of a big collective yawn towards the Independence Day sequel, because there is...
Is Tarzan the 4th of July movie then? Is that the thing we're supposed to run out and see next weekend?
Tarzan and, yeah.
Why wasn't, and maybe you don't even know, but I was, why isn't this next weekend's movie? I don't, since that was really kind of how it, like, made its mark.
Good question. I don't know. Next week is Tarzan and the BFG, which is the Steven Spielberg kids movie, Big Friendly Giant.
But I don't hear, I mean, to your point, I'm not hearing anything about either one of those.
I think Independence Day is one of those that they're predicting for it to be
to have a resurgence next weekend. No?
Okay. Finding Dory to have a very strong 3 or 4 weeks. You know, I think to a degree that, like, that 4th of July thing, Christmas, 2 weeks before Christmas is gigantic. You know, when do the Star Wars movies?
Sure.
When are they scheduled? Yep. You know, a week or two before Christmas. Gigantic. So it's a similar kind of idea. So I don't know. Independence Day, resurgence. I feel like I haven't even really actually talked much about the movie itself, because it's way more interesting to talk about the problems with the movie business. than it is to tell you what Liam Hemsworth does in this movie, which is stuff we've seen before 400,000 times. You know, you say, do we need another Tarzan? Do we need another Ben-Hur? Do we need another War of the Worlds? This is what this is. Give us some kind of new twist on it. The big reveal in the last one was that they aren't the aliens. That's actually an exoskeleton. The aliens are on the inside. Hot damn. At least I don't know. There's only
what people cannot see, and we might want to think about doing this on Facebook Live. What they cannot see is like you're so close to like saying what the twist is in this movie because
there
you're
is
so,
none. That's the
so,
thing. There
you're
is
so
none.
Angry about it.
There is nothing surprising about this movie whatsoever. Like I remember sitting there thinking, "Oh, I'm watching the big climactic sequence, aren't I?" there is,
and you said you didn't talk to yourself.
Well. Thinking to myself.
Okay.
I think to myself.
Fair enough.
And then I write it down in my little notebook because I'm the movie critic.
You skip the talking to yourself part.
Well, the movie has no. I'm not joking when I was like, oh, I guess this is the big climactic sequence, isn't it? Because there's just so little. I would never begrudge a film that upends that. Stereotypical screenwriter class, exposition building action, rising action, climax, falling action, denouement. my high school, high school English teachers are listening to this, they're like, yes, something stuck.
Mark it down, episode 10, denouement.
I don't begrudge any movie that tries to change that formula because it is a formula. But that's like you go up a hill and you roll down it. This is Iowa. This is a highway in Iowa. There's just like no real kind of dramatic arc at all. There's very little suspense. It's just a lot of noise. With a few, and the quiet moments in between are like Bill Pullman, running around crazy with a beard, bugging his eyes out. The aliens are gonna do this, and don't go see it. Just don't go see it. I know a lot of people have a lot of nostalgia for the first Independence Day. They a lot of people saw it when they were 15, and. It stuck with them.
Sure.
They had a great time going to the theater with their friends, and they, it was an event, and Will Smith and the one-liners and all that. And I'm out. Next week,
I wasn't gonna go see this, but now all I can think about is Bill Pullman going into the bathhouse with the aliens with all the smoke. And now I'm just wondering what that psychic connection looks like, and now I want to see that. So I'll be right back.
Oh, he's so bad in this movie. He is so bad. I love Bill Pullman. I really do. He's just so...
Hang on, honey. Got to go into the alien sauna. I'll be right
next
back.
Next week, we'll talk about the BFG. Mentioned that before. Steven Spielberg, Roald Dahl book. I've actually seen this already, but I don't want to get into it. We'll also get into Legend of Tarzan. We'll see what else...
When are you going to go see that? Because I sort of want to go see it with you.
Well,
or have you seen that one too?
I don't think there's going to be any critic screenings for that. At least in my market, on this end of the state. I'll see you Thursday night.
All right,
and I might squeeze something else in there. There's a remarkable, a good buzz documentary called Tickled.
What's that?
It is about a journalist who finds out that. There's like a competitive tickling, like a tickle. People make money to lay there and let other people tickle them, and so he calls this organization and to like inquire about doing a story, and they threaten him and insult him, so he starts digging in. I hear it's an amazing
wow.
Story. Just when you think, documentaries have covered every niche. you have this.
Wow.
So I might try to squeeze that one in before next week's episode too. So anybody out there, thanks for listening. Go see the Neon Demon. Go see the Shallows. There will be more elbow room in those auditoriums this weekend than in Independence Day
reciprocity.
Thanks for listening.